welcome to the Tipsy Archives. My name is Rachel Ligge, and I am joined by my friend, you know what? I don't know how to pronounce your last name, I just realized.
I was thinking that on the way over. I'm going, I know how to pronounce her last name, and I went through this whole process of learning that. I'm Chanel Bodie.
Bodie, okay. Yeah. I was going to say
Bodie. It's like yours, like everybody thinks they're pronouncing it the right way.
Yeah. So I get Rachel Liege or yep. Lig or Lige or...
I get Bode a lot. Or Bode. Yeah. Bode is the new one. Yeah. That didn't used to be a thing. Now it's... Mm-hmm. So.
Rachel Ligge. Chanel Bodie. Chanel Bodie. Friend and artist. All right. So, we today are going to talk about a show that you just got to see, which I'm very jealous about.
Yeah.
And this is Yayoi Kusama and her Infinity Rooms.
Oh my goodness, it was so good.
So you and your partner went all the way to LA recently.
Yes.
This was, what, a couple weeks ago?
Yes, this was on the 15th of November. Yeah, so yeah, basically 2 weeks ago. We knew about it in Seattle, but we didn't have time to get down there before it finished in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So he basically went, well, I looked it up. It's going to LA next. Why don't we just, go to LA?
So this show, I believe, is part of a 50-year retrospective tour.
Yeah.
And I don't know all the cities, but I know it started in D.C. It was in Toronto.
It's going to Toronto next.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it started in D.C., it went to Seattle, it's currently in L.A., I believe until the start of January.
Okay.
And then it goes to Toronto, and then it goes to, I believe, Chicago and Atlanta, but I don't remember which comes first. But yeah.
Cool.
So if you're in Toronto, the tickets go on sale, I think they're on sale, like, right now for members of the AGO.
So even before you guys went to LA and planned the trip, I don't know, a couple weeks in advance or so, the tickets, the pre-sale tickets were already sold out.
I believe they went on sale, and unbeknownst to us, at the beginning of October, and they sold out within 2 hours. They added more, and that sold out just as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So basically we were going to LA on a bit of a gamble of... I don't know, let's just fly down to LA and they'll have day of tickets and hopefully we just stand in a long line and make it in.
So, obviously, you were aware of this artist for a while. Like, when did you sort of, you know, first kind of become aware of Kusama?
A couple of years ago in art school.
Yeah.
And we all had to do different presentations on different artists. And a friend of mine had chosen Kusama and her work really resonated with me personally.
Because you yourself do installation as well.
Yeah. And I'm really interested in the repetition of mark making. Like, that's a big part of my work. And so that aspect of her work, and also just the idea of working through things in series by just repeating and repeating and repeating.
And we'll kind of get into this, I think, after we talk a little bit more of the show, but the way she works through trauma and mental health issues with her artistic practice.
Completely.
Yeah, which is also a thing, like, and I've actually only really became aware of her in the last year. And it was through just a couple videos that have popped up on my feed. But right away, it just, like, there's just something so personal and endearing.
Yeah.
And, like, I just think it's pretty hard not to just love her as a person.
Really, really. Yeah. Yes, truly. Yeah.
So you guys, you know, had good luck and you got tickets the first day you showed up?
We did. The nice thing about, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, because it's spelt like broad, but apparently
it's Broad.
Yeah. Yes, and I had to look that up. I got the lesson on that.
The Broad Gallery in LA.
Yes.
Which is a really interesting building.
It's an incredibly beautiful building. Oh my goodness, the architecture. And it's right next door to the Walt Disney Concert Hall.
Oh, really?
Which is a Frank Gehry, so it's just like these two beautiful buildings.
It's got this really interesting texture.
Yeah.
On the outside, which, like, if you had that phobia of that you're afraid of things with holes in
yes,
it,
you would not be able to go into that. Because even inside, basically right inside that texture, the whole building is glass. So when you're inside the museum, all you see out is this honeycomb-esque texture. But yeah, so we looked it up ahead of time, and the museum opens at 11 most days during the week. And they actually have a Twitter account for not just the museum, or not just the gallery, but also the standby line.
Oh, wow.
For Kusama tickets.
Oh, wow.
So they were saying most every day that they still had tickets, things were still happening, and it seemed that, you know, most of the time you could get in.
I guess that's convenient to check if you're in town, and they say no more tickets today, or something like that.
There was one post that said, you know, most people are showing up 2 to 3 hours before the gallery opened, and I went, there's no way. Like, that's... I didn't think I would be able to stand in line for that long.
Yeah.
So we just thought, okay, we'll take our chances, we'll go an hour before they open. We got there about 10:15 by the time we parked and sort of got ourselves in the line. The line had gone halfway around the building.
Yeah.
They'd already started selling the tickets before the gallery opened, so they were getting things moving. And within half an hour, we got into the front of the line. We got the next tickets available, which were for 12 o'clock. So it was 10:45. We decided we'll go have lunch and we'll come back and basically just get in our lineup for 12 o'clock.
Because the way a lot of these rooms are set up or the experiences, they kind of only let so many people go in to certain areas at once, right?
Yeah. So it's the way that the exhibit is set up is it's flow through once. So you can... Once you've gone through one section, you can't go back and look at it. You have to, because they are trying to keep people from re-lining up for the infinity rooms. You can only go in once.
Right.
If you're coming in groups, whatever the size of your group is, as long as it's under 5, you're all going in together.
Right.
There's no, that way they save time and they get more people through, right?
Hmm.
Each room, you only got 30 seconds in.
So wow.
We went together, so we went into each room together.
So you don't, you can't linger.
No, you got to be quick. I read some tips online about take your first 10 seconds, take a bunch of photos if you want to do that, and then just take the rest of your time to just take it all in and it really get yourself into the experience of each room.
So I think there's 6 infinity rooms?
Yes.
So describe a couple of them to me. Like what was, I mean, describe them all if you want, or pick a couple favorites. Or
my favorite was the first one and the most popular one. On Instagram, as it is, the souls of millions of light years away.
Right. This is the very cosmic.
Yes. Looks like just this beautiful blue galaxy. Mm-hmm. And you walk in and it's completely pitch dark. So for most of the ones that are with the string lights, they're pitch dark when you go in, and they, after the door gets closed, I guess sensors will start illuminating the room. Slowly it warms up and they sort of twinkle and they pulsate a little bit. It's really...
So this isn't like you're going to look at artwork in a museum. It's like you're having an experience that envelops you completely in the space.
Experiential participatory art.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just...
So when I say infinity rooms, I mean, we're talking about the mirrors on every wall, you know, the ceilings.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like a funhouse type idea, but also it made me think of, I don't know if you've seen Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee.
I haven't, no.
And he's like gonna fight. This is kind of a trope that happens in some movies where like they're looking for the bad guy and then a room full of mirrors.
They
can't tell which one's the bad guy or which one's mirror reflection.
Yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of that because you get split into all these mirror reflections. So you see yourself, you know, go on and on forever and the lights on and on forever. And it just creates, it almost looks like you're in this giant wide open space when really it's just a fairly small room of
mirrors. They're very small too. Yeah. Like, you know, you're sort of, you read about it online, or I mean, I did certainly before going, and people go, you know, you'll be surprised when you go in just how small they are compared to how big the pictures and the mirrors make it look. And you go in and they can't be more than 8 feet at their longest point. They're quite small. They're probably, I would say a bunch of them are probably 7 feet across.
Well, and some of the installations you don't go all the way in, right? Like you just look into?
Yes. There's, I think, 4 of them are like mirror rooms. Mm-hmm. One is sort of a hexagonal box, and it's got 2 little windows, and it's called Love Forever. And you, you know, if you're in a pair or groups, then, you know, someone will look in through both windows and you see each other, but you also see each other reflected in this sort of panopticon like, ad infinitum like reflection.
And that really, Kusama plays with a lot of these ideas of sort of like, connecting to people, connecting mm-hmm. to things with herself, but then also, like, the idea of infinity and the cosmos and forever and this, like, universality, and also where are you in that grand scheme of these large spaces that just go on. And there's a lot of really big ideas behind these kind of thoughts and feelings that she's trying to capture in these experiences. And especially, like, positioning herself in the world, I think, mm-hmm. is a lot of where...
Yeah.
These thoughts come from.
Yeah.
So, and then that room that you're talking about, I believe, is the one that Adele shot a music video in.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, this, clearly I need to buff up on this, because that sounds like an amazing...
Yeah, this was coming up in my... I mean, I never watch music videos, hardly ever now. But it came up in my sort of, my notes that she had seen Katy Perry... tweet a picture of herself in the room, and then mm-hmm. she thought, like, oh, this is perfect for the theme of my new song, and she shot some footage in there. And that's another thing, too. I mean, I guess it's good they limit the time, because they don't stop people from taking photos. And so a lot of these experiences have become really big hits on Instagram and Facebook and social media. And which is almost like, you know, this free advertising... for her, and it's helped this whole thing blow up for Kasama.
Absolutely. It's really, I mean, by the time, even before it basically hit Washington, which is where it started, the show had sold out.
Yeah.
And I know that when it was in Seattle, I think one of the last nights it was there, there was, you know, kind of a big kerfuffle, because I think it was Sierra had... rented out the Seattle Art Museum and had decided she was just going to take her time enjoying all the Kasama rooms. So they just opened it up. She basically bought out the museum for the night, and just...
Perks of being a celebrity.
Right? I mean, I wish I had that kind of money, because, like, 30 seconds, it's a surprising amount of time more than you think it is in the rooms.
Well, if you think about how long you stand in front of an artwork in an art gallery or a mm-hmm. museum...
I think the average is like 3 to 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's not that long.
No.
But especially when if you kind of get to go in just with a couple people, mm-hmm. you can kind of sit with the experience for a few seconds, because you want to take as much time as you're allowed to have.
Yeah.
So that probably really changes the experience for you.
The other thing I thought about after doing it, which I really thought about because I was looking at some other artwork upstairs after we got through the Kasama exhibit, and I went to sit down on the floor to take a picture of something, and I was told I wasn't allowed to do that for security reasons, I guess. I don't know, even though mm-hmm. they're like, you can squat, and I was like, well, physically I can't squat, I have to sit. But mm-hmm. But I can only imagine what it would be like to be able to just sit down in these rooms and just watch them go, like,
just especially lay on the floor.
Yeah.
So how did you enjoy All the Eternal Love I Have for Pumpkins?
Oh, All the Eternal Love I Have for Pumpkins. Okay, one, I love pumpkins.
Yeah,
they're
me too.
Pretty much my favorite thing mm-hmm. about fall.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the saddest part for me about that was you weren't allowed to take photos in it. There was a big issue, I believe, in Washington when it first opened, where somebody fell on one of the pumpkins and damaged them while trying to selfie. So
not surprised.
Yeah. So there, I mean, when you go into all of them, or almost all of them, there's glass barriers around where the platform that you walk into on, so that you can't go beyond that.
Right.
But All the Eternal Love I Have for Pumpkins was, it's mm-hmm. very different from all the others.
It's
in
so
that series.
Whimsical.
It really is.
Cause, like, obviously, she has a huge love for pumpkins, and she says it's, you know, they have this really humorous shape and they just seem so warm and they cheer her up, and they've popped up in, I think, so much of her work.
Oh,
she's like done these pumpkin sculptures over and over and over again. I mean, of course, because repetition is her thing.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
So these same sort of, there's a lot of things in her artwork that even since the 60s have come up over and over again.
Yeah.
Polka dots obviously being mm-hmm. the number one thing. She calls herself the priestess of polka dots.
Yeah, she loves polka dots.
And she's got all kinds of sort of life theories connected to, you know, her as a dot, or all of us as dots, or like, you know, the way that you know, how she wants to express things with Dawes. I actually came across a quote on the Broad site where she says, "My desire was to predict and measure the infinity of the unbounded universe from my own position in it with polka dots."
Yeah.
Yeah. So she does dots. She does tons of pumpkins. You also see a lot of tentacles.
Yes. Phalluses everywhere.
Phalluses. And not everywhere. Like...
kind
of grotesque detail phalluses. Like, not to say that I think phalluses are grotesque, but
phallic and more tentacle-like.
But they're almost like these, like, very, like, they're soft sculptures of, like, they're almost like little stuffed animals that are very simple and made out of fabric.
They don't have limbs. It's just this one shape. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's so, and that's something she's been doing for a long time too, is taking all these soft phallus, sculptures and attaching them to furniture, so it's an entire couch made out of.
Yep. There's a dinghy / rowboat.
Yeah.
And oar.
Was that one there as well?
That one was there as well. It was silver. Cool. I think there might be multiples of that one in different colors, but
she started her career by painting a lot of paintings of nets.
Yeah, the infinity netting. Nets. Yes.
Actually, I saw an interview that she gave online, and she was talking about how. And we'll get into talking about her, I think, right away here. But she, so Yayoi Kusama suffers from all kinds of mental health issues. And one of these things that she's been suffering from since she was a child is hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just crazy hallucinations of patterns all over things and enveloping her whole world. But when she started doing these net paintings, she was doing them on canvases, and then the canvases got bigger, and then eventually the canvases, the net started going on the walls, and then they were going on the floors, and then at that point she kind of became this installation, like, environmental artist, where it was just her patterns and her work was just in everything in the space.
One of my favorite pieces from the exhibit at the Broad was... an offcut of a painting of hers, of an infinity net painting.
Mm.
And it was, I believe, about 30 feet long by about a foot wide.
And it's and just
it,
one section.
It was just one strip because it was too tall. The whole piece was too tall to fit on the gallery wall she was initially going to install it on, I think in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And so they just cut off this strip off the bottom. And just to think about, it was laid out in this huge glass case, to think about the actual size of the original painting and just how encompassing and all enveloping that would be, because I'm really big on being able to walk into experiential art and having an experience with a space and the art-based space. There's a really great exhibit that was on at the Richmond Art Gallery last year, the year before, all about bees, and the name of the exhibit is failing me. And now because of Kusama, I want to call it All the Love I Have for the Bees, which really, it wasn't, that was definitely, like, in line with what the exhibit was. But it was, I think it was Jasna Guy had this huge installation of wax-coated paper that she had printed on. And it took, the whole thing couldn't fit on the wall, so similarly, parts of it came out onto the floor, and the rest of it had been not installed because it couldn't fit. And the whole space just smelled like beeswax.
I actually remember
just sat in the space
years ago, and as a teenager, my mom was, I think, working at the Alternator Gallery in Kelowna, which is a very small, often lots of student work in it. And a friend of hers, Margot, don't remember her last name, I believe it was Margot, did a cheesecloth and wax sort of tunnel with, like, a cave.
Oh, wow.
And you could go in it.
Yeah.
And so it was almost like going into a womb or something like that. But it's like it brings you right inside of this little space. And just the way that you, especially when you can't see anything else except you're inside there.
Yeah.
I mean, like you have nothing to do or to look at other than to be in this piece of art and look at it and smell it and hopefully not touch it unless you're allowed to, but maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what made me think of, too, that smell of wax is really...
Yeah, and I'm really interested in, as I say, in all-encompassing art spaces and experiential art, but being able to sit down and have a relationship with artwork, I think, is the one unfortunate downside to being limited with time. Although I also think that...
And space.
That makes you be...
Mm-hmm.
Very conscious, or more conscious, perhaps, of your connection with that space. But mm-hmm. I really like being able to sit down in front of big works and just sit there and mm-hmm. enjoy them and have this dialogue with them.
I, as somebody, we both have mm-hmm. some physical issues with mm-hmm. pain, and I really like it when I go to a museum or a gallery that has somewhere I can sit.
Yes.
And
phenomenal.
Recently, the Museum of Anthropology had a Traces of Words exhibit, which was all Eastern calligraphy. And they had one room, and it was all a digital display of all these sort of kanji-like mm-hmm. symbols sort of floating around on the walls, and it was all video screens. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I didn't.
But you could go in, and you could sort of... You didn't actually touch them, but your shadow would go across the... I'm totally doing this with my hands, but you can't see. Your shadow would go... You'd reach up towards the wall, and the shadow would be cast upon the symbol, and the symbol would disappear and turn into what the symbol... So if it was a symbol for butterfly, your shadow would touch it, and then it would kind of disappear and turn into a butterfly.
That's incredible.
And so it was this really cool video screen room, and the whole room was kind of like dark and had these lights. Mm-hmm. But they also had these benches, and you could just sit in there. And I really enjoyed sitting in the room and watching people interact mm-hmm. with the walls, and there was no time limit, so I could just hang out in the room and kind of the dim lighting and watch how people were interacting with the work.
Well, that's one of the things I really like about the MOA is that you can just ask for a portable chair, and there's these red collapsible chairs.
I love those portable chairs.
And you can just wander around.
They're so comfortable.
And when you want to just sit down, you just plop your chair down, and you just sit, and you just enjoy whatever you're enjoying.
Yeah.
Right?
So I was on one of those in the last week or two.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
I wish more museums and galleries would do that and encourage that.
I know this isn't everyone's experience, but me personally, like... sometimes I need to sit down, and or sometimes the pain in my back prevents me from appreciating the art or standing there as long as I want to.
Yeah.
So, from a note for people with physical ailments,
yes,
I'm slamming
indeed.
My fist down.
Both of us.
Make art accessible and comfortable for everyone, especially people who can't always stand.
I really don't understand. Like, I had this problem at the Broad, and I'm sure there are some kind of explanation or experience that they had that, turned this into policy there, but mm-hmm. I literally had just sat down cross-legged in front of something, mm-hmm. and I was immediately approached by two docents of, like, no, you can't do that. You must kneel or stand or squat. And I was like, okay, but if for security reasons, I'm actually more secure if I'm sitting than if mm-hmm. I'm squatting. Like, I'm doing damage to my joints if I'm squatting.
So I can understand the on-the-floor thing as far as somebody's not looking and they trip over you. But
perhaps.
For that reason, it's like, well, then provide a couple of collapsible stools
mm-hmm.
for people to do that if they need to.
Yeah.
But yeah. A little bit of a tangent, but it's an important one.
It is an important one, absolutely.
So we were talking about how Kusama does so much repetition with the nets and the tentacles, and so let's talk a bit about her. The Priestess of Dots, and why she does what she does, and... you know, who she is. So, Yayoi Kusama was born in 1929 in Matsumoto. So she's 88 years old now.
She's the same age as both my grandparents, yeah.
Yeah. She actually has the same birthday as my partner.
Oh.
I realized that today. It's March 22nd.
Oh.
So she was, you know, part of this family. And unfortunately, her upbringing was not super happy.
No, it was not.
She had quite an abusive mother. I think, like... physically abusive, but also really just, you know, verbally and mentally abusive. And her father was somewhat absent and had a lot of affairs, and her mother would force her to go and spy on her father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not only did that kind of, you know, scar her, ruin her relationship with her parents, but it also gave her lifelong issues with sex.
Yeah, quite traumatic.
Yeah, she was both obsessed with it and really averse to it.
Yeah.
Like, she... yeah, that's something why she does so many of the phalluses. And
It was a way to work through it. And by repeating this shape, eventually it just becomes so funny. Or, I mean, it certainly did, I think, to her. Eventually just you repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And it becomes comical.
Mm-hmm.
So you being able to laugh at the thing that you were, you know, afeared of before... and this, I think, is quite very much her philosophy of, you know, humor is the way through trauma. Humor is the way through healing, is just repeating things. You can't you can't not laugh at things when they're repeated.
Well, and her depictions of, like, her little soft phallic sculptures, I mean, they're so kind of cute.
They are. Yeah, they really are. Like, they're not, you know...
They're not threatening at all.
They're very, like, soft. They look like these little odd, as you were saying, like, stuffed animals almost.
Yeah.
But, you know...
So she was also a very creative child, and she, from a very young age, wanted to be an artist, wanted to be a painter.
Yes.
But her mother did not want that. She wanted her to marry a rich man and have a family.
Yep.
So her mother would take away her paints and her pens and would not let her do art. But obviously she was, I mean, if you can say one thing about her, she is incredibly focused.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she has this, this woman just eats and lives and breathes art.
Oh, she eventually, I mean, she did persevere regardless of that, and she did go to art school.
Yeah.
And she was the first female artist to represent Japan in the Venice Biennale, I think in 93?
93, yeah.
You know, so that, I mean, speaks volumes, I think, to... Mm-hmm. You know, and even within her career, like, really after the 70s, she kind of just dropped off the radar for a long time. She went back to Japan.
Yeah.
Well, first,
just to back up a little bit.
Yeah.
She did study art in Kyoto when she was around 20.
Yes.
But she found it too conservative because it was probably quite traditional.
So limiting.
So she decided to go to the States.
Yep.
And I don't have a lot of details on this, but I know around this time she started writing Georgia O'Keeffe.
Yes. Apparently they became quite good friends and pen pals.
Mm, yeah. She just reached out to her and kind of...
And Georgia O'Keeffe was like, yeah, like,
mm-hmm.
totally keep doing what you're doing. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely.
I think she may have even helped her a bit, like, get to the States and help her apply for citizenship.
Certainly, I think into New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was running in, like, the same circles as, you know, Andy Warhol and... Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Yes, she finally got to New York in 1958, and at that point, because she sort of started out hanging out around some abstract expressionists and doing some mm-hmm. paintings around that time.
Yeah.
More so into the 60s, she gets really into the avant-garde and pop art scene.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where she's, you know, coming into contact with Warhol and a lot of these guys. Her art kind of moved from being painterly to being more about performance and installation.
She organized all those happenings, particularly the one on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, which involved a lot of her painting nude people covered in polka dots.
Polka dots, yep.
Yeah.
Just let's keep doing the dots.
The dots have been around for decades and decades. So, yeah, she had the happening. She, you know, was getting into fashion at this time, too.
Yeah.
She was making a name for herself. She was going to anti-war protests.
Yes.
But unfortunately, around the early 70s, her mental health was really suffering.
Yeah.
So, I think in 73, she returned to Japan.
Yeah.
Still having a lot of problems with her mental health, the hallucinations, mm-hmm. and, like I said, it was, seeing flowers, dots, colors, auras, and patterns just multiplying around her and engulfing her,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously you can see in her artwork.
Oh, yeah.
And she calls it self-obliteration. So it's what she sees happening to herself and then also what she does in mm-hmm. her rooms and in her artwork, because she kind of obliterates everything.
Yeah.
So she checked herself into a mental hospital in 1977.
Yeah.
And she's been living there ever since.
Yeah. And she has a studio, I believe, basically just across the street.
Yeah.
So she pretty much just, you know, goes out, does her work when she... you know, is up to it, and which is, from what I gather, mostly every day.
Yeah, I think it's basically a daily practice.
Yeah, she goes out, and she returns.
She needs
for treatment.
The schedule, she needs the repetition, she needs to do something.
Yeah.
To kind of deal with what she's experiencing. And she said a number of times if she didn't have art, she would have killed herself a long time ago.
And I mean, I'm not going to comment on behalf of anyone else, but I certainly feel, as somebody else who's dealt with, you know, mental health issues, art is certainly a way that I've worked through trauma and worked through anxiety and whatever. And I've, from a few other people that I've talked to, that's a coping mechanism. And that's how people get through their daily lives. And if you don't have that or you restrict that, mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people suffer for it.
I luckily haven't had too much trauma to deal with in my life. I mean, I have my own, you know, anxiety and depression issues that have, yeah. you know, come up. But, and I haven't had to use art in that way. But when I think about not doing art and when I think about it not being a regular part of my life for whatever reason, that to me is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that starts to fill me with anxiety.
Exactly. Like I'm doing this thing and nobody, of course, at home can see, but I'm shaking my hand over my chest of like, you know, I'm getting quite flustered and uncomfortable yeah. with that.
Just the thought of
absolutely
not being able to, or just having that fear. I mean, like, I know you got your degree in fine arts
yeah.
and having that fear that something will happen in your life to that you'll just stop or
yeah.
I mean,
or
I'm
unable for whatever reason.
I don't see that happening to me, but you see people who, you know, are teenagers or go to art school and they're so into being mm-hmm. artists and then they get a quote unquote normal job and have a family yeah. and they just kind of stop.
Yeah.
And they don't paint anymore. And I understand that that happens, but like that's a terrifying thought to me.
Yeah. And I've certainly seen, not quite to the point of people completely stopping, but I've seen, you know, that light get squashed out for a bunch of people within art school.
Yeah.
They'll have a professor who doesn't agree with the route they're taking. And instead of saying, okay, well, clearly if you're into this, it's something you need to work through. It's not necessarily something I think you should focus on forever, mm-hmm. but I think you need to foster people through whether you think it's a phase or not in their artistic practice. You need to foster people through what they're mm-hmm. working, rather than tell them, you know, no, you're better at this and you should go in this direction. You
I
know?
Remember my mom
Let people
saying,
come to those realizations.
I was expressing a frustration over something in an art class and saying like, oh, but like, what if I don't like this particular style mm-hmm. of making or talking about my work?
Yeah.
And my mom was like, you know what? You're only in art school for so long. This is the only chance you're going to have to do this
yeah.
kind of stuff. Or this is the only chance you're going to have to get this weird in this way.
Yeah.
Like, just give her. And
yeah.
then later you can do whatever you want.
Exactly. And I mean, you have access in art school to spaces you don't necessarily have access to once you leave art school. For
yeah.
me, it was the pseudo gallery space of our studios.
Mm-hmm.
We had huge, you know, 8x12 walls. Like I took advantage of it one day and a couple of my installations. One of my first installations was like, I think it was ended up being 8x15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I plastered the walls with all these emails and
right.
these redacted emails. That's
mm-hmm.
probably one of my biggest and most formative pieces in my more recent years. And another piece was, I took over an entire, we call it the waste, it was officially it's called the waste room, but it's like a small room that's adjacent to our studios. It's not used for anything. It's empty. So most of the time people use it for installations or digital work because it's dark in there. And that was where I put my first garbage bag net installation was in there. And I just took over the whole room with these giant nets that people could crawl under and through. And
yeah, the garbage bag nets.
Yes.
You know, I was mentioning to you, we had seen each other last night at a party.
Yes.
And I was mentioning to you, there were some interesting shows at the Belkin I had seen. And one of the, and you said you hadn't seen it, but that reminded me, one of the artists was making nets out of, stripped plastic from wiring, and it was like she would walk around the Vancouver sort of flats area near the train station
yeah.
and collect the wiring that was cast off from people stripping copper wires to make money.
Oh.
So it was like taking the cast offs of people making
yes.
like illicit basically ways of surviving
mm-hmm.
for people who are often like living on the streets
yes.
and then making nets out of them in a way to tie them to First Nations
mm-hmm.
Sort of like survival and
yeah.
food gathering.
Yeah.
So it was super interesting, but it's interesting. And then Kusama has her nets.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Her
so it's interesting
nets.
How this idea of nets, you know, kind of comes up.
There's something I think, I mean, again, I don't like to speak on anyone else's behalf, but I mean, in my own artistic practice and in viewing other people's work, especially around mental health, I find that nets tend to reoccur. And for myself, it was a way of creating control through repetition, for mm-hmm. one thing.
So you do really connect to this idea of repetition.
Absolutely. In it's one of the reasons I think I love printmaking, and printmaking resonated so much with me, specifically in Taleo. Mm-hmm. And just mark making and repeating marks and pulling things away and, you know, stripping away the wax and mm-hmm. etching into it. And then, you know, inking, re-inking, inking and printing, inking and printing, inking mm-hmm. and printing until you're done your edition.
Are you a Warhol fan?
I don't know that I would call myself a fan in terms of, like, aesthetics. Like, it's mm-hmm. not super my aesthetic, but I appreciate what he was doing
yeah.
with his work.
It made me think of, like, one cool thing about printmaking is that you can make the same print over and over again,
yeah.
but there's always all these subtle variations,
mm-hmm.
and he really pushed that idea, yeah. especially when we look at, like, the yes. Maryland prints and
absolutely
stuff.
Absolutely, with the Marylands. Did you see yeah. the pop-up show of his that came here
a
couple
it.
Years ago? Oh, that was lovely, because mm-hmm. there was quite a number of the soup cans, I think, were up there as well. There was
yeah, you get this repetition with a slight variation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can create the same print, but you can do it in different colors, or, you know, certain parts won't print the way mm-hmm. they were printing a moment ago, and that's just sort of the nature of the process.
Part of the magic of printmaking.
Really. I mean, mm-hmm. I think printmaking is quite a magical process. I'm really fond of it for many reasons, but, you know, print witches abound, and just repetition is... There's something very soothing, and also something... very much about finding peace through control in repetition. The more I find that I repeat something, the more I feel I have control over the final product, and the more I find peace in that. And the more I work through things and think through things while repeating things, it really becomes very much a space where, especially when I was working on the garbage bag nets of weaving these nets, where I just got to be alone with my thoughts. And at times that was quite difficult.
Yeah.
But at other times it was very much reckoning within myself.
Did you, as part of your making process with the nets, I mean, were you conscious of the thoughts you were having while you were making
yes.
them?
Yes. Yeah. And part of that also got into thinking about the braiding of hair.
Yeah.
And there's definitely... you know, a pagan magical practice of, mm-hmm. you know, putting intention into, you know, your weaving, especially when you're braiding. And I braid my hair every day.
Well, you know, so. First Nations practices with weaving
absolutely.
The blankets. Like, there's a show on Musqueam
yep.
blankets right now at MOA that you, especially when you're making a blanket for somebody, you shouldn't have negative thoughts
yeah,
because
you're
going to be giving
conscious.
Them all
yes.
of these things that yep. are going to have all your energy in it.
You have to be
it.
Very conscious about... Yeah. Your mental space and mm-hmm. yes, the thoughts and the intentions you're putting into something, especially if you're gifting it to somebody else.
In a similar but completely different way, like, so I tattoo,
mm-hmm.
and often I will be working on a drawing or something, and I'll have a TV show on, and mm-hmm. I like to put on movies or TV while I'm drawing something, and say I'm drawing this, you know, these roses and a raven.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching, you know, something ridiculous like Nashville.
Yeah.
So, like, and I'll be working on this drawing, but this the show and the storyline and the characters are in my head, and I'm drawing it. And then later I take it to work and I tattoo it on somebody, and I can't stop thinking about whatever I was watching.
Yep, because
it's
inherent now in that piece.
It's like in a line that I drew, I remember
yep.
a character saying a thing. So, yep. like, I kind of inadvertently end up, like, soaking these drawings in, like, pop culture all the time. It's like, I can't stop thinking about the song that I was listening to, or I can't stop associating the movie.
That always reminds me...
which is sometimes funny, and other times
yeah.
really annoying.
About, well, I mean, in records, like, when you're scratching a line into a record to put sound into it, like, it's, you know, you can also do that in pottery of, you know, you can scratch lines into things, and whatever is being said sort of gets inherent in that. Now, whether you can ever actually play that back, it's there, like, it's been recorded. And so I think it's similar in terms of drawing and mark making. Whatever is happening to you at the moment that you're making that line, it's in that line now.
Yeah.
It's a part of it.
Yeah, I certainly have experienced that for sure of myself.
Yeah.
And what you were saying before about sort of like repeating things over and over again, and it kind of gives you a bit of like a mastery and a peace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I definitely think that's very in line with Kusama and how she feels about doing these repetitive patterns,
mm-hmm.
and that it's like, she's called it art medicine, and
yeah.
that she, you know, this is what she does every day, and it soothes her.
Yeah.
And also, like, she's spreading everything within herself out towards the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost, I mean, she comes from, like, this, the hippie happening 60s, 70s. So you certainly can't blame her for being, like, we're all the cosmos. I'm a dot in the sky, and I relate to this. And it's
free love.
Yeah, it's very... And she really feels that. She actually said, right now is probably the worst time in history that she's lived through.
Yeah.
That we're in the darkest century that she, you know, it's darker than the last century, and mm-hmm. she's 88 years old. So
yeah, and that's scary.
And she does really feel that, like, you know, the love and peace that comes out of this kind of art, mm-hmm. this infinite art and infinite space and infinite love, will actually make a difference.
And the, okay, so when, go, if I'm going to jump back to the exhibit as well, you end the exhibit by going through the obliteration room, which is all the polka dots. And when you walk into the obliteration room, you get, like, a little square of polka dot stickers, different colored polka dot stickers.
Yes, and lots of these pictures.
And the whole point is, put the stickers wherever you want.
Yeah, so the room started as a completely white room with completely white furniture.
Yep, IKEA furniture.
So I'm just refilling our sake cocktails.
Absolutely, please. This wonderful sake sangria.
It's our blood orange sake sangria.
This is wonderful.
It turned out pretty good.
It's phenomenal. I'm going to need the recipe for you from this.
Absolutely.
So, but you go through the obliteration room at the end and you get the stickers. And really, that's, you know, Kusama spreading out. And really, each exhibit that hosts the obliteration room is a new room. It's not the same exhibit. It's a different exhibit every time because it's it's changed by everybody who goes through it. Everyone, you know, puts their own mark on this exhibit, and in that way is connecting with themselves, is mm-hmm. connecting with Kusama, is connecting with each other, is connecting with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I didn't like, and I'm a little bit hesitant to admit this publicly, but the thing that I didn't like was I tried to leave and keep one of the polka dot stickers for myself.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let me. They said, no, you have to give us the blank paper at the end.
Oh.
You have to put the stickers in the room.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll find...
put one on the street and spread it.
So, well, see, and I thought, you know, on the one hand, yeah, if everybody just came in and took the stickers and then left with them, yeah, the room wouldn't be what it is. But on the other hand, I thought it was a little bit averse to what Kusama's work is, which is this idea of spreading and connectivity. Mm-hmm. And so I went back into the room and I took...
So you're just trying to break the rules all over the place.
You know what? Here's the other thing about artists.
Stealing the stickers.
Especially artists, when you go through an art exhibit and you get to actively participate in art, if you don't let me break the rules or if you give me a rule, I'm going to have to break that rule.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if it's like, I don't want to break things. I just want to bend rules a little bit. And I don't see the harm in keeping a sticker.
Yeah.
Especially when the point of her work is literally to create connectivity and connectivity mm-hmm. throughout the universe and throughout the world. And
you just have to go buy some round stickers and start putting them on things.
So I went back into the exhibit with the sticker and I went, okay, I have to find a really good place for this. And I stood in there for about 10 seconds and I went, no, I don't. And I just sort of discreetly lifted up my shirt a little bit and stuck the sticker on my stomach.
There you go.
And walked out.
So then the sticker's still leaving with you.
Yeah. And I mean, I also thought that was very... I mean, again, like, maybe Kusama would hate that I did this, but who knows?
No, she wouldn't.
I don't think she would.
She thinks of herself as a dot in the universe,
I think
so...
she would think it was funny.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Until I hear from her, I'll never know, right? but so I stuck it on my stomach, and of course then I walked out and I took a very cheeky selfie of myself with the dot sticker in the obliteration room behind me, and...
Nice.
You know, that was my little rebellion and my mm-hmm. little sort of... spreading the dots. I think the dots. Well, the other thing too is, as soon as I walked out, I looked at the escalator up to the main gallery, and somebody had stuck 5 or 6 dot stickers on the escalator belt for your where you hold on to. Like, so I'm going,
Other people have snuck.
Other
the dots
people have
out.
Done this. Come yeah. on now.
Yeah, and even the same way that people you stick the dot stickers on things. I mean, back to the social media thing. I mean, it's kind of the same. People are pinging up here and there mm-hmm. with these pictures, and that's also connections. You know, people see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I saw it because somebody shared I became aware of her because somebody shared a video on Facebook.
Yeah.
So that's just another connecting.
I like to think of, And I was thinking about this before I even really became introduced to Kusama's work, but especially in light of her work, I think it's incredibly apt, is I like to think of all these different little relations and how we, you know, some people think of it as like the rule of six, you know, or the separation of six, you know, like degrees of separation, etc. I think of these connections as constellations, our relationships between each other and how we connect create these constellations.
I thought of relationships like that, especially in the polyamorous community.
Absolutely, right? Definitely in poly, you know, there's your polycule, and I like to think of it as constellations. So
it works for friends and families and work relationships. And
Absolutely. So I, especially in light of Kusama's work and, you know, galaxies and infinite light and just being a dot among dot. We are a speck on a dot moving in a series of dots around a larger dot in our solar system.
The, which is part of Kusama has turned
even
us
more
into
dots.
Now.
You know, I mean, like, it just... it just, it continues out and we don't know what the boundaries are. And I think that's beautiful. It's terrifying to think of yourself as so small, but it's also quite comforting.
I find it comforting as
well. I find it quite comforting.
Yeah, I do. Just a quick note, I was thinking about, you know, if you haven't seen what she looks like or, you know, her work, just a quick note on her appearance. Yeah. Of course, she's this adorable 88-year-old, like, tiny Japanese woman who now, in her old age, is always wearing this bright red bobbed wig.
I love that bobbed wig.
And she's into fashion. She's been designing clothes for a long time. So she's often wearing clothes that she's designed, or always, probably, that are also covered in dots, this fabric that she made. So, like, it's common to see her within an exhibit where she matches the exhibit.
She goes around in a wheelchair that is covered in dots.
Of course she does. Yeah.
Like, as soon as I read about that, I went, oh my goodness. Like, that is my life goal of, you know, keep your aesthetic.
Yeah.
Forever. Like,
so, like, if you see a room that's, you know, everything is covered in dots, everything is covered in the same colors, you know, all these gourds and pumpkins are covered in the same patterns, she can walk straight out of the wall and she's wearing a dress with the same pattern.
Yeah, and you never know.
Yeah, she's just, she's a extended part of her art exhibit. Yeah.
That's kind of one of the beautiful things I really liked about the obliteration room is you know that there's furniture in there, but when you're at different angles, you can't really see what's in there.
Yeah.
Like, if everything was one color and there was, you know, the same lighting from absolutely every angle, you could say the same thing. But once everything starts getting obliterated and dots, the lighting starts to not make a difference. And you can't really tell where one surface ends and another begins in a lot of cases. Not for all cases. And it also, I guess, would depend on the time that I was in the exhibit versus the beginning, you know, further before I was there at the exhibit and then after. I'm sure at the end, by the end of that exhibit, that it's just going to be, you'll never be able to tell what's what in that room.
I hope that Yayoi Kusama will just live to be, will never die, and live to be 1,000 years old, constantly getting smaller and cuter and painting dots forever.
And that when we all, you know, when the reckoning comes, we all go onto this giant dotted spaceship with Yayoi Kusama. I don't know.
I was just picturing like a post-apocalyptic world where she's just walking around painting dots on everything.
I think that would be a beautiful, that's a beautiful premise for a post-apocalyptic movie.
Yeah.
I feel like she'd be into that. I hope she'd be into that, because I would...
Can't stop spreading the love dots.
I would give incredible amounts of money to see that, because it just, that's, it's just such
just
a beautiful...
Just realized can't stop spreading the love dots kind of sounds like an STD. I'm not going to think about it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it sounds, I don't think it sounds that dirty.
Maybe it's just me. This is my brain. So, obviously, you loved the show. It was amazing.
I would highly recommend it if you can
get
down
to it. Are you feeling inspired?
Yeah, I've actually just, I've been kind of on a hiatus from my own work for a while, so I've just, now that I've come back from that, I feel a little bit rejuvenated and more into it, and I've started working on some things, so.
Cool.
Keep that in.
Oh, this is, you mentioned you were working on some, can I say?
Yeah.
Some galaxy-related paintings. Is this a little bit inspired by the Infinity Room?
I don't know if it was or if it's just, I mean, artists, we got to survive in certain ways, right? So I certainly think the the dots have stuck with me in the repetition. I want to get back into repeating my own patterns, because that is comforting. So,
well, I hope that I get to see something that
absolutely
I'm working on sometime in the future.
Yeah
Cool.
I'm excited.
Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your experience with me.
Thank you for having me.
Like I said, I only recently kind of got into her work, and as soon as I heard that you'd gone, I was quite jealous and saw your pictures, of course, and they looked great.
Yes.
And it's always fun to talk about art.
You can find more of her photos from the exhibit, all the exhibits, on Instagram at hashtag Infinite Kusama.
Okay.
In case anyone is curious to go...
Infinite Kusama forever.
Yeah. Love forever.
She will never end.
Love Kusama forever.
Okay, and thank you everyone for listening. And of course, if you want to ever shoot me an email, it is thetipsyarchives@gmail.com. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at tipsyarchives. Thank you for listening. Go look at some art. And thank you, Chanel.
Thank you.
Cheers.